Good evening. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder. Welcome to Mind Over Matter, a monthly K2 radio show that explores issues of our hearts, our minds, and our bodies. During the past several programs on Mind Over Matter, we have focused on the interrelationship between our mind and our bodies through such practices as acupuncture, yoga, tai chi, and somatic experiencing. Tonight, my guest and I would like to attempt to put it all together and look at a holistic model for well-being. We will focus on how to have the truly good life, one that costs virtually nothing and is based on lifestyle choices and practices which lead to mind and body health. My guest tonight is a Junoite, Linda Buckley, who at the ripe old age of 72 has studied and practiced many aspects of mindful, healthy living. Welcome to Mind Over Matter, Linda. How are you?
I'm great. I'm healthy.
Oh.
I feel great.
Okay. Super. Now, I know that you worked for many years as a teacher in the Juneau Public School System, and you're retired now. Mm-hmm. So what led you to become interested in holistic health?
Well, let's see. Actually, in 1973, I attended my first yoga class. And that's quite a while. It didn't come to Juneau until the 80s, yoga. Mm-hmm. And it was a new concept for me to think about, you know, that my body and, you know, that how I moved my body was affecting my health. And in that yoga class, it ended with a 7-day fast. It was a water fast where every time we got hungry, we just did yoga and breathe and did a lot of breathing.
Mm.
So that was my introduction to, I had never felt so incredible. And I was, you know, in my early 20s. And I remember at the end of the 7-day fast, we broke the fast with a smoothie that was strawberry, yogurt, and banana. And those flavors, just I can still taste them. And then the afternoon was a slice of avocado and a tomato and the seeds of the tomato. I mean, after your tongue is rested,
yeah.
It's just unbelievable. So that was like my first time. And then I've always kind of had an aversion to doctors or to pills or anything, and my parents modeled that. And my mother lived to be 91 and taught swimming till she was 88, and my father lived to be almost 99. And they just lived this incredibly healthy life, and I thought, you know, I want that. And it seemed to be that the way they walked, they exercised every day, they ate healthy, and they also drank apple cider vinegar, which is a whole other, you know, thing. They didn't drink alcohol, but every day they had a shot of apple cider vinegar.
And that was for what?
It turns out that there's a whole book, and I found it when I was unpacking my house. I just sold my house last year, and here's this little booklet that they gave me for my birthday in 1991. I didn't ever open it until this year. And it says all of the ways that apple cider vinegar increases your health. And one of the main ones is it helps with joint pain. You know, it alkalizes the body.
Oh.
And so my parents, in their 90s, never had any arthritic pain.
Whoa. I'd like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was great.
You've done a lot of study. I know, could you talk a little about some of your background on mindfulness-based stress reduction? You're a yoga teacher,
mm-hmm.
and decades of nutritional study.
Yeah, so, you know, I got certified as a yoga instructor in the late 90s. I went to India in 91 and did my first 10-day meditation retreat and just saw how busy my mind was and how the effects of 10 days of silence was profound. And I continued that from then on, my pursuit of meditation and mindfulness. And so that, you know, as we were talking about holistic, so the spiritual dimension of me staying healthy has really been, I can tell when I'm a speedy kind of person anyway, and it just means so much when I can go for a walk and just be quiet for long periods of time or just sit at a retreat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I've got involved in yoga. I retired from teaching in 96. And then I began to go to the Optimum Health Institute in San Diego and learn about alkalizing the body and about this holistic approach to to wellness, which it turns out I had been practicing all along anyway, because my parents had modeled that. They were very spiritual people, and they had a daily exercise regimen, and they ate incredibly healthy.
Boy, they were ahead of their time.
They were way ahead of their time, yeah.
Well,
and perfect teeth. That's the other weird thing. I mean, if you eat healthy, you know, like, you know, your teeth don't decay if you're not drinking a bunch of soda pop and eating sugar. So.
And have, in India, the system of medicine is called Ayurvedic. Mm-hmm. And did you have any contact with Ayurveda?
My first real immersion in Ayurvedic medicine was last winter, actually, just in December, January. I spent 6 weeks in southern India at an Ayurvedic retreat center. I'd been in India before and sort of dipped into it, but this time I really had a doctor who checks your pulses, and they find out what your dosha is, and there's three, Pitta, Vata, and Kapha, and I was pretty sure I was Pitta, which means fiery. You know, I knew that already, but they confirmed that. But then as you get older, you're usually a combination of those. And so based on that, I was, you know, told to walk. That was hard, you know, walk an hour a day in these beautiful tea plantations. And there were two hot oil massages a day. That was really difficult to take. And
she's laughing. It wasn't hard for her to walk.
Or do yoga. Yeah, we had yoga four times a day. I mean, the doctor put this on my prescription. You must do yoga four times a day. And the morning yoga was kind of... you know, kind of a combination. The middle of the day yoga was 30 minutes, and it was for to control your appetite. The afternoon yoga was predominantly pranayama or breath work, and then the last one of the day was meditation. So they lumped it all together as yoga, but it was, you know, all the different aspects of yoga. Right.
So it included, yes, because most of us think of yoga as a physical exercise.
Right.
But it includes meditation as well.
And breath work, yeah, a lot of breathing.
And as I recall, you've been a long-term meditator?
Yeah.
What's your background there?
So, well, as I said, I've had my first... It was basically on a bulletin board, intro to meditation in Dharamsala, which is where His Holiness the Dalai Lama has his community in exile. And I was traveling with my daughter, who was 19, and I said, well, this is intro to Buddhism 101 and meditation. Do you want to go? It's a 10-day residential. And she said, yeah, there was a cute guy at the bakery, and he signed up, so I think we should go. But the thing is, who cares? If there's a cute guy, you're not going to talk. You're not going to look at each other. I mean, it's like very, very rigid.
Uh-huh.
So that sort of tricked her into going. But we both benefited a lot. And then I have found many teachers, but the one I resonated the most with was in 1993. I met Thich Nhat Hanh, and he's written all of these great books on mindfulness practice.
Mm-hmm.
And Peace is Every Step, you know, was his first book. And
The Miracle of Mindfulness, which is fabulous.
Yeah.
And
now there's curriculums in the schools on mindfulness.
Right.
And, you know, that word was not in the common vernacular in 93, and now it's used all over the place. And yeah, I did many long retreats with Thich Nhat Hanh.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You've had an eclectic education.
I have.
Post-retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about this term holistic health or holistic medicine. And I'm just going to read a definition. Holistic medicine means consideration of the complete person, physically, psychologically, socially, and spiritually, in the management and prevention of disease. It's underpinned by the concept that there is a link between our physical health and our more general well-being, body, mind, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an official definition. Do you think Western medicine, which is also called allopathic medicine, do you think there's any trend that it's going in that direction? I mean, how do you see the difference between holistic...
Well, I think that, you know, this... One of the things that seems to be changing is that, you know, you have all these specialists. And, you know, if you want to deal with the liver, go down to room 104. But, you know, I'm here working on your gallbladder, and I'm in 203. And And our whole body is sort of, you know, this guy's, you know, got a specialty and his is internal medicine. And this person has a specialty and they're a neurologist. And then there's an oncologist and his specialty is cancer. So I think once they realized, wow, what's happening in the colon is also affecting the liver, or what's happening, or if maybe if you haven't spoken to your family for 30 years and you're filled with rage, maybe that's affecting your body. So I think it's evolved over time that, you know, people realize that what happens over here to the body happens in the rest of the body, and not just on a physical level, but what happens emotionally affects the body.
Well, when Jon Kabat-Zinn developed mindfulness-based stress reduction, and I know you've been trained in that by Jon Kabat-Zinn,
right?
As have I. There was very substantiated research that was done where individuals, they did it in Madison, Wisconsin, and they did it at a high-tech firm where everybody from the janitor to the CEO took the 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction class, where mm-hmm. they're basically learning mindfulness. They're learning how to meditate.
Right.
And they did pre and post. And so they did assessments on the brain, as well mm-hmm. as, I thought the interesting thing was they gave everybody a flu shot to see how their immune system worked. And so then they controlled the people who took the took the course and compared them to the control group. The difference was very notable. If you took the 8-week course, your immune system responded much better to the flu shot than if you did not take the 8-week course. Research has been done on many other illnesses mm-hmm. and how the immune system responds.
Right.
And our emotional center lies in the prefrontal cortex. And so what they noted after the course,
right.
The more positive emotions are on one side mm-hmm. of the prefrontal cortex and the more negative emotions are on the other side. And most of us are sort of in the middle. What they found out is after the 8-week course with several months of continuing practice
mm-hmm.
that the people who took the class had a definite move towards the more positive side of the prefrontal cortex compared to the people who were in the control group and did not.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very interesting because normally we think that's temperament. In other words, you're pretty much born with a set temperament.
Right.
You know, you may be a perky person, a fairly happy person,
right.
or you're a person who tends to be melancholy. This doesn't mean that you're born
right.
depressed
right. Right.
Or constantly elated. So, you know, research showed at that point that there's a mind-body connection
sure.
that I feel when I go to my physician in Juneau, I feel she's got a pretty good grip on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though her training would not possibly have been in that direction,
sure.
you know, 20 years ago mm-hmm. at University of Washington or wherever she went, I just think that even allopathic
yeah.
medicine is being influenced
sure.
and recognized.
Yeah, I think you're right.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Except they have a long way to go because I think there's a very well-known holistic health clinic at University of Arizona in Tucson.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying.
Okay. And I think that if you really want holistic health care, where you have a number of specialists working
mm-hmm.
with you at the same time.
Right.
So nutritionists,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't be everything to everybody,
right.
but you could have a naturopath, you could have an allopathic doctor, you could have a nutritionist, you
mm-hmm.
could have a physical therapist,
mm-hmm.
all working on the same team.
Sure. Well, now they're having the naturopathic oncologist. You know, that was kind of a new concept a few years ago, and now it's not a new concept. And now so you're having chemo and you're nauseous, you have acupuncture. That helps with nausea. You want to boost your immune system, you have a vitamin C injection. You oxygenate the blood. You know, you do cannabis for sleep. I mean, so it's this blending
mm-hmm.
of all, you know, that's the great thing about, you know, knowledge. Just, you know, well, if this works, well, hey, over here this works. Well, maybe if we put these together, this will work for the whole person to feel better.
One book that's been very popular is called Being Mortal by Atul Gawande, and I know you've read it. Mm-hmm. I've read it. Many of us have read it. And I think he's moving a few inches more into a patient-centered mm-hmm. type of approach to medicine.
Mm-hmm.
For example, about half the book was dedicated to new designs of continuous care facilities mm-hmm. and or nursing home care, mm-hmm. where instead of the meals being 7 o'clock, noon, right. and 5 o'clock, one of the staff will wheel around, especially for dementia care patients, will wheel around a cart so that they can eat when they're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was talking about working with patients who had a terminal diagnosis, but there was always that magical cure. There was always one more thing, some experimental, mm-hmm. heroic mm-hmm. intervention that could mm-hmm. be done. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, I think, quite brave of Gawande to really talk about, take a look at quality of life versus prolonging life, or even some of these radical cures may be more harmful than yeah. helpful. So I think Gawande is kind of moving people.
Yeah, and along. He's a respected physician. That book got a lot of readers, and then they had the film, you know, on the book
yeah.
as well.
So if anybody is interested, mm-hmm. you can just go. I think I paid $1 on YouTube or $2
to see
see Being Mortal. Mm-hmm. It's real easy.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've heard you say is that the body is a self-healing organism. What do you mean by that?
No, that's actually a quote that that they say at the Optimum Health Institute, where I worked for 3 months, and I've been going there probably 2 weeks every year for a number of years, just as kind of, I believe, for part of my health is to do an annual cleanse. And it's a cleansing program. So, you know, that means basically eating raw organic food, and in their protocol, there's a lot of wheatgrass, which alkalizes the body. And so there's a lot of people that come there, though, with life-threatening illnesses. And they say, you know, we're going to give you introduce you to a program that potentially, if you're on, even people that are there on high blood pressure medication, by the end of 2 weeks, they've stopped taking that medication because the body has suddenly been given what it really wants, which is live food, enzymes, no sugar, no alcohol, nothing to knock the body down, everything to build the body up.
Mm-hmm.
And the wheatgrass is, it's a really potent, it's the same pH as the blood, and it's just strong superfood. And they, not only do you drink a couple of shots of this, which are kind of tough to get down. The only way I can drink wheatgrass is to put Tiger Balm under my nose so I can't smell it.
Really?
And then I drink it like a tequila shot, and I lick cinnamon off my hand at the end of it to neutralize. So it's not that it tastes wonderful, but you keep saying this, my body loves this, because I know my body just, I mean, I just feel like I can climb Everest after a couple of weeks of doing a lot of wheatgrass. But you not only drink the wheatgrass, but a true cleanse involves cleaning the colon, which we're going to get to. This aspect of a healthy body is, to me, the toxins are held in my intestines. We don't talk in our culture that much about colon cleansing, but in other cultures, I mean, I go to India, I do coffee enemas, I go to Thailand, I'm doing the same thing, because if you do a cleanse, you're not only putting good food in, but you have to get rid of toxins that have maybe been in your body for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the Optimum Health Place, which is really extreme, is you do an enema, and then you put wheatgrass in the enema bag and put an implant into your colon so that it takes those nutrients right into your colon, which is it's not a normal mm-hmm. Western kind of, you know, thought process. But it's because of that I think people really absorb the nutrients of this practice. And so this body is a self-healing organism, and my dearest friend who worked there with me for 3 months had stage 4 lung cancer that had changed. You know, she'd had breast cancer years before. She was given like 6 weeks to live, and she went there with tumors all through her lungs and basically, well, I'm going to die anyway, I might as well try this. And she worked there for 3 months, then she worked another 3 months and stayed there 9 months and did wheatgrass every single day and ate raw food and did an enema every single day. And at the end of the 9 months, she went back to her doctor, who she referred to as Dr. Pit Viper, because he was very lacked a lot of bedside manner when he told her she was going to die. And she said, well, I've just gotten my blood work back, and I don't have any cancer. What do you think? And he said, well, I don't know what you're doing, and I don't want to know, but keep it up. Because it wasn't going to fit into his frame at all.
Sure.
And so when I work there, I mean, it's not like everything's a miracle cure, but you just kept hearing about people who were given, you know, terminal diagnosis, who, because they ate great foods and they did emotional detox and they did a holistic program, they were, and because they said the body is a self-healing organism, it knows what to do. When I broke my femur in a car accident, I had all this stuff that was in my leg ready to repair that bone. I think they're called little blastocytes or whatever they are. They only show up when you have a broken bone.
Ah.
You know, like things are in your body going, oh, it's our turn because there's this person's bleeding, you know, so we're going to clot. And so the body has all this, it's just phenomenal, you know, but... You know, you have, it's a trick, because it's like, okay, my body knows how to, like right now I'm dealing with a basal cell carcinoma. You know, I have skin issues because I've got a lot of sun damage. So that's my big challenge. And I've had a melanoma. And so what I realize is I have to keep my immune system really healthy. And I have to, when I see something on my skin that's not okay, I have to deal with that. And that's when Western medicine is great, because they're going to help me with that. You know, they're going to excise something that shouldn't be on my skin. So there's definitely, the two have to work hand in hand.
Okay.
But, yeah. So it's complicated. That body is a self-healing organism, because you have to say, what can I give my body to help it heal?
Yeah, well, you know. I wonder what Michael Pollan, who wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma, are you familiar with his work?
I am.
Yeah, I loved his book.
Right.
And, you know, he basically said, you know, eat anything, any real food that your grandmother or great-grandmother would recognize from the food store. He's going to have to say great-grandmother at this point, because things were changing pretty rapidly. I would be somebody's grandmother, and I certainly saw processed food. I mean, here, the wheatgrass and the cleansing routine is so unusual, and you certainly aren't going to do it forever.
No.
So, and human beings have been around and not eating wheatgrass or getting cleanses.
Right.
So do you feel that this is necessary because of the toxins in the atmosphere? This is different than it would have been, you know, 500 years ago, before all the pollution?
And we're sedentary. You know, I think there's a lot of things that contribute to the dis-ease in our beings, for sure. Because, you know, I check all these things. I'm type O. So, you know, if you read the Eat Right for Your Blood Type, which I have read that as well, and I thought, oh, there's a reason that I crave, you know, protein from meat. And that's, you know, I'm the hunter-gatherer blood type. And I also live in a cold climate. You know, I don't feel drawn to eating a salad today. It's 7 degrees or 17 degrees outside, and I want a nice, rich soup. And if I can get wild meat, all the better. Venison and moose, there's nothing better, you know, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We're really blessed that we live in, you know, a place where we can actually get food from the land.
Right.
So, you know, the whole wheatgrass and raw food, it's only to cleanse your body. It's not meant to be a maintenance diet.
Uh-huh.
It's meant to be like, okay, let's just clean out all the toxins and start fresh and see, you know, how many weeks can I go before I have a cup of coffee and some half and half, or, you know, a Christmas cookie, you know?
Yes.
You know,
good. Well, hey, let's take a short break with some good music, and then Linda Buckley and I will be back to talk more about holistic health and well-being.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Mind Over Matter. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and with me in the studio tonight is Linda Buckley. We're talking about how any of us at little cost can choose a lifestyle, can choose practices, lifestyle practices that promote our mental and physical well-being. So, Linda, let's kind of package this up a little bit. I guess we could call it a prescription for a healthy, well-balanced life. And let's talk about the ingredients to this delicious stew for the good life. And let's make a point that the good life has little to do with money.
Okay. Right. It has a lot to do with discipline, however, which I have in small
self-discipline.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with a healthy, balanced diet. And you talked about some things are certain foods compromise the immune system.
Right.
Could you talk a little bit about that? You mentioned that earlier in the show.
Right. So the foods that, you know, that are sort of that if I feel like I'm getting a cold or a sore throat, then as much as I don't want to not, you know, have coffee, the caffeine, you know, is actually something that, for me personally, it knocks out my immune system. It revs me up and it doesn't allow me to sort of heal. It gives my body this stimulation that, it, you know, caffeine stimulates the adrenal glands and I need my adrenals to be working to stay healthy. Sugar, you know, gives you a quick boost of energy and then a drop, especially, you know, white sugar. But really any form of sugar, you know, we have this idea that, oh, well, honey's okay or maple syrup's okay, but sugar is sugar is sugar. And even high glycemic foods, you know, certain foods like bananas, I love bananas, but they actually have a lot of natural sugar in them. So if I'm going to really give my body every fighting chance, you know, I'm going to like lay off of that stuff. And for sure, alcohol. Alcohol converts to sugar. So, you know, the glass of wine with dinner, you know, it seems so benign, but it's, you know, those are the big ones, you know. And the other one is dairy, which, you know, I have a friend that's really a purist and she's vegan and she says dairy is scary and delete meat. Well, that's her life and it's not mine. And I'm very drawn to dairy and I'm very drawn to meat. But I do know that dairy is a kind of a mucus producing, so that I love yogurt and I love cream. So those, I would say sugar, caffeine, alcohol, dairy. So these are the things that compromise my immune system and most everybody's immune system, actually. So then when I want to boost my immune system, I have extra doses of vitamin C. I mean, sometimes I will take, you know, 5,000 milligrams, you know, 10,000 milligrams even.
And do you feel the research is pretty
absolutely
consistent? I mean, that it is positive?
Yeah.
I thought there was a big study done some long time ago that didn't find any benefit to vitamin C. Are there some more recent studies that...
Boy, I'm gonna get that to you so you can put it on your next radio show, because not only vitamin C, it's kind of like crazy how awesome vitamin C is, not just, you know, for your immune system, but, you know, they're giving it to cancer patients to boost their immune system. Vitamin C injections.
Really?
Just potent. I have a friend who's older than me by 5 years, who doesn't even use reading glasses, and she attributes it to her huge amounts of vitamin C she's taken her whole life, and she's taken it because she has profound allergies. So she said, I think a side benefit, you know, who knows what her research on vision. But so I think it's such an interesting thing. I mean, we've been told to take our little, you know, vitamin C pill or eat oranges, you know, for a long time. So I do think that vitamin C is very potent, as is, you know, as we were just speaking earlier, a lot of how can we get vitamin C from a natural source, you know, that's the ideal, you know, if we can pick the orange off the tree and pick the grapefruit off the tree. So boosting the immune system, that's one thing, but also just for me, when I want to be healthy, you know, I'll have a couple of eggs, you know, that's for me. I need protein and I'll have a green drink for sure, you know, which I throw in protein powder, chia seeds, flax, spinach, kale, This is my go-to thing in the morning, by the way.
Well, that's interesting because I was just listening to the radio today, and it was a public service announcement by a nutritionist from Bartlett Hospital reminding us that over the holiday season, we should be careful because we're eating a lot of food that isn't good for us to make sure we have a lot of green, you know, broccoli, cauliflower, you know, kale.
Yeah.
She mentioned that.
That's great.
Yeah.
You heard her on the radio because she does, at the Cancer Connection, this new person at Bartlett, you know, reinforced what I've been studying at this health institute, that the 7 best vegetables, you know, that are anti-cancer and that are, like, great for you. I have to do a trick. So the 3 C's, cabbage, cauliflower, and collards. I don't eat a lot of collards, but I guess they're loaded with good stuff. And then the 3 B's are broccoli, bok choy, and Brussels sprouts, and then kale. The 7th one is kale.
K.
Yeah. And so those 7 are just rock stars.
That's what she was talking about.
Yeah, you just got to
And what do they give you if they're rock stars? What's in them? Yeah, they're just the best thing for us.
They're just loaded.
And is that what you do with your green drink?
Well, my green drink, because I mean, spinach isn't on that list, but I know spinach is a healthy green. You know, I don't want it to taste too healthy or I won't drink it. So I throw in a banana and frozen blueberries. It tastes really yummy.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it tastes good?
Oh, yeah. And then the other thing is I throw in some ginger. Ginger also helps boost the immune system. Yeah, fresh ginger. If I can get a hold of fresh turmeric, and a friend just dropped some off, they were selling it locally. Fresh turmeric. Potent.
Huh.
Yeah, this is the other thing.
I know turmeric. I've heard about people.
Well, yeah, and my daughter's partner's Indian, so now I'm learning, like, turmeric, man. Just throw it in everything. And there again, it's another one of those, like, well, why didn't we know about this, you know, years ago?
And in terms of our natural resources locally, that includes indigenous knowledge.
Yeah.
And I know that Search, I wonder if Search includes in their health care Devil's Club ointment. I bet they do.
I bet they do. And actually, the nutritionist that you just mentioned, she talked about our blueberries being loaded with antioxidants and even more potent than blueberries that are from Maine or some other, you know, places around the country, for sure around the world. And, and that Devil's Club, you know, was so fabulous for all kinds of things, but now it's being found that it's actually helpful for pancreatic cancer.
Mm.
And, you know, these are things that are right, you know, they're in the backyard, but knowing the proper way to collect them and the proper way to respect, you know, the natural herbs, I think is really important. And I think a lot of times we're walking right over something that's just what we need, you know, because we don't have that knowledge.
We don't have that knowledge.
And that's why, you know, I mean, it's important to preserve it and learn it as we can. Nettles. I know a guy, lived in Homer. Yeah, he was like in his 90s, and he said it was nettles tea. You know, he would harvest nettles every year. Another big source of vitamin C.
Oh, yes.
Nettles.
Let's go. I know you have a lot of knowledge and interest about colon health.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what can one do aside from being at a health retreat and having enemas and eating wheatgrass
to keep a healthy colon?
Yeah. What can one do?
Well, first, I think we don't really know that much. Yeah, I remember when they said, first of all, this is 6 feet long. That's what's curled up inside of us, something that's 6 feet long. That's not to mention how long our small intestine is, but the colon. You know, so basically we're maybe emptying the last foot. There's 5 feet of it that's all inside there. So this is why it's really healthy to do a cleanse, because you can hide, you know, you give your body a rest. You're not constantly putting more food in. And hydration is really important. And I think living in a cold climate, we forget to drink a lot of water.
Okay.
So hydration, they just did a special, actually, Science Friday. I wrote Flato, yeah, you said, talked about how jet lag is related to colon health. They were talking about this very topic on Friday. Because, of course, jet lag, first of all, you're sitting on a plane for a long time. Then your sleep, your circadian rhythm is thrown off. And this is all, again, it's all connected. And I'm just fascinated by how a lot of people think having one bowel movement a week is normal.
Hmm.
It's like every day, maybe three times a day. I mean, when you eat, it's like the food goes in, it gets digested, it needs to come out. All the toxins need to come out. And for some reason, because we've had, you know, sadly, when I went to school, man, you had a bathroom break when the bell rang. You could not just go anytime.
Right.
So I think we have jobs. A lot of people at their work, you know, it's not possible. So at this institute, there was a jet pilot that did these transatlantic flights. And that was back, you know, he couldn't leave the cockpit. I don't think they had all of the whatever. So I think that there are lots of people in my family. There are people that have IBS. I didn't know what IBS was. It's irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, what causes it? Why are there so many? There's colon cancers rampant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think colon health, first of all, understanding.
Think of ulcers as the obvious mind-body connection because of the relationship to stress.
Yeah, yes. So, you know, like you say, I recommend that people should have colon hydrotherapy. And there's apparently one person still in this town that does that. And years ago, I was introduced to that by Glenna Wild, who was a naturopath in Juneau. And the beautiful thing about that is that there's warm water that fills your entire colon. And then, you know, it's a machine so that, you know, you're lying there comfortably and you're basically having your entire colon hydrated. I compare it to cleaning, having my teeth cleaned. How great my mouth feels after I have my teeth cleaned and floss my teeth. And I feel just as good when I have, you know, had my colon cleaned. And it's just like, yeah, I know. It's a topic that is almost verboten in our culture. But
I know since you know, I lived many years in India that it is a topic that is not forbidden in India. In fact, we know all about the former prime minister of India who used to do some very strange things by American standards.
Uh-huh.
And it was well known and not considered the least bit
unusual.
In India. Well, is fasting related to colon health or is that another benefit?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that benefits the whole body is just like meditation helps our mind to rest, fasting helps the body to rest because your digestive system, you know, we're always working so hard to digest our food, to process our food. You know, all of the organs of the body get involved. So when we fast, you know, it's giving the body a rest, and it's a time I find that it's completely connected. When I fast, I feel more prayerful. When I did that 7-day fast, I mean, poetry that I hadn't thought of for years just flooded my being. You know, beautiful thoughts. You know, I wanted to read things that were uplifting. And so, you know, I know that there are people who do long water fasts. And, you know, I think that now they say it's really important to do that with a doctor's care. I think it's more common to do juice or vegetable fast, you know, just something where you're not having to process to break down a lot of food. So it takes 15 minutes to break down something like watermelon, which is mostly water, 15 minutes for the body to turn that into waste. It takes half an hour for I have all of these numbers. What I remember that it takes the longest, you'll never believe this, but it takes 8 hours for the body to break down prawns.
Oh.
Yeah, because they're kind of like little cholesterol balls, you know. I love to eat seafood. But 8 hours, that's a long time for the body. It has to really work to break that down. It's not saying it's bad. It's just that, you know, we're asking a lot of our digestive system.
Oh, good.
So fasting, you know, gives the body a chance to
rest. A real emotional, psychological influence, too. The few times I have fasted during yoga retreats, I don't know how to explain it, but I felt ethereal. First of all, you have a lot of free time.
That's
because
right.
You're not preparing food or eating it. You've got all this time. And it's like demarked. It's almost like a meditation retreat. It's, it's marked sort of as a special time.
Right.
You don't do the normal things. And it's kind of a sacred time.
Yeah.
It's a quiet time.
Yeah.
Okay, well, hey, speaking of sacred quiet times, let's get some more beautiful music going. We'll take a short music break, and then Linda Buckley and I will be back to talk a little bit more about developing mindful life patterns that create better health and more happiness. Welcome back to Mind Over Matter. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and with me in the studio tonight is Linda Buckley. We've been talking about how we can develop simple life practices which promote our physical and mental well-being. And I think now we've been working a lot on the physical and not to separate it from the mental. But let's talk about mindfulness. And I know that you mentioned that you have studied with a very famous Zen Vietnamese master, a monk named Thich Nhat Hanh, who's written numerous books that are popular today. Thich Nhat Hanh talks about life practices or mindfulness practices, otherwise known as precepts. And let's think about how that might relate to, you know, just ordinary people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, interestingly, Nancy Seamount, who used to teach at the high school, she and I started to work with mindfulness concepts in the high school. And
when you were teaching.
When we were teaching. Yeah. And we had, I was talking to the students about the five steps of mindfulness. And I said, the first thing is you recognize when something, you know, like let's say, for example, we're talking about mindful consumption. eating mindfully.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say that you're about to have, you know, some French fries, and you recognize that, you know, maybe they're not that great, you know, but oh well. So the first step, I recognize something. The second one is that you hold that without judgment. You don't beat yourself up about it. You just, you know, you're, okay, I'm going to have some French fries. And then, because I was going through these steps with these students, and they said, well, what about if I recognize the French fries are bad and I don't judge myself and I gain some insight, but I eat them anyway? What's the point? And I said, well, and then one of the other students said, well, maybe when you're Mrs. Buckley's age, you know, you'll realize that you have, you know, cardiovascular problems. You'll stop eating the French fries. And so that's what's so fun about using these concepts with kids, is because they just, like, put it right there, right? You know, so they go, so I'm at step three. Now what? You know, and I'm still unhealthy. But so there's these recognizing, so let's take it into, that's food. Now let's take it into, Thich Nhat Hanh talks about mindful consumption of what we read, of movies that we watch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, several times somebody has said, hey, would you like to go to the movie? And I say, right off the bat, you know, is there a lot of violence? And, oh, a little bit, you know, because I said, I'm really susceptible to having nightmares if I watch a movie that's violent. You know, I basically don't stop. I can't just watch the movie and go home, and it's in my head. And Thich Nhat Hanh says that. He said, mindful consumption is you're taking it in. You're taking it fully into your body, just as if you were eating it.
Mm-hmm.
And the books that I read, and you and I were just talking about social media, is you can start scrolling down on Facebook, and you know, some of it might be kind of, oh, there's my friend, and, you know, that's kind of fun, or they're traveling here. But then you keep scrolling down, and you maybe you watch this video or that, and pretty soon, you know, there's this sort of, it separates me from reality. You mm-hmm. know, it takes me somewhere else. And it's not that it's good or bad, because that's the whole point, is to not judge myself or the whole process, but to say, how is this affecting me? I am consuming this. How is this affecting me?
Yeah.
And how is it affecting my health? And I'll tell you what, to live in Alaska, to live right here in this place, I'm looking out the window at that new moon, that beautiful crescent moon, and to be able to go right into nature, you know, right out the door, that is my, I think that is my biggest secret to health right now, is that when I'm in grief, I can go walk outside and I can cry into the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And when I come back home, that grief is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or part of it, at least part of it has been taken by the landscape.
Yeah.
I can feel incredible joy. I remember one time thinking, oh, I'm just going to keep breathing, you know, because this is, you know, really stressful. And I went out to the shrine and I was walking out there towards the church, and a sea lion came up and just, I mean, it just breathed, and I went, oh, I'm not breathing. That's breathing.
Yeah.
You know, I realized I was doing this a little shallow, but I mean, the sea lions and the whales, man, they know how to exhale, you know.
Well, as a therapist, I could really see the connection between the amount of time people spend indoors, particularly looking at screens,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, a smartphone or a TV or a Game Boy, and looking at screens versus the time they spent in the wilderness out of doors, which is in our backyards, cost nothing, just on a local trail.
Right.
And then the research is absolutely consistent on that. I remember one article I read in the American Psychological Association publication, and it's been replicated many times, which is the amount of time we spend on screens is directly proportional to how depressed we are. There's a depression.
Yeah,
there's a depression scale that I can give clients, and they did that in the depression test, and they saw a direct correlation.
Sure.
And what's poignant is, of course, the irony of what is called social media. It's really anti-social media, because, of course, real relationships require FaceTime.
That's
it's
right.
Of course, it's It's fun to see your nieces and your nephews' photos. Mm-hmm. But if you're spending 3 hours a day mm-hmm. looking at Facebook or TV or something else, mm-hmm. you're not spending those three hours a day interacting with real human beings.
Yes,
that's and that's
right.
that's what feeds our soul.
Yes, right.
And makes us healthy. And the other thing is top on the list of what we can do to improve our health, even cancer survival rates, it's our social connectedness.
Yeah.
It's our community. Mm-hmm. Being mm-hmm. connected to other people. Mm-hmm. This simply doesn't mean that you have to be Miss Popularity and have dozens of friends. Mm-hmm. You could have a few close friends. Mm-hmm. You could have a few close family members. It's being connected to real people in real time.
That's right.
And that includes all kinds of connections, work connections. Let's say you go to the swimming pool and you yeah. sit in the sauna. Mm-hmm. Those are connections. Those
That's
are
right.
social connections. You belong to a quilting group.
Yeah.
Those are social
That's
connections.
Right. Yeah.
So social isolation breeds ill health
That's right.
and depression.
Definitely.
No question about
Definitely.
It. Yeah, I love Thich Nhat Hanh's emphasis on mindful consumption. Mm-hmm. We can also think of it at a planetary level. Mm-hmm. Because we have been engaged for the last hundreds of years in growing mindless consumption, and it's brought us to a
right.
virtual planetary collapse.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
and we have to scale back our consumption
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
in order to reduce pollution.
And the other, you know, the flip on that, just because I know we're getting close to wrapping it up, but he also, Thich Nhat Hanh, talks about, you know, what feeds your joy. And, you know, it's uh-huh. in that use of the word food, but it's like, so if I consume this and it makes me feel sad, you know, what, so when I did that with kids, you know, I said, well, what feeds your joy? And I remember one little boy said, well, and you might think this is kind of odd, but dragons feed my joy. I mean, when I think of dragons, I just get all happy. And I think he was thinking of like Puff the Magic Dragon. But, you know, and then we went around the room and somebody else said, well, you know, dolphins, they're just so joyful. They feed my joy. And someone else said, you know, skiing in the powder feeds my joy.
Yeah.
And a rainbow feeds yeah. my joy. And so that ties into this other aspect of wellness. And I think, you know, I have a friend and she said, Linda, when we're in the Pioneers home, I'm going to have friends because I'm reliable and I always keep my word. You're not so reliable. Sometimes you say you go hiking with me and then you bail. But you're funny. And that's why people are going to still be your friend, because you're going to make them laugh. And I thought, that's such an interesting thing, because humor.
Humor and
you know,
laughter.
And laughter. And so at this health institute, they make us, at the end of an exercise class, we laugh for a full minute. You know, like, because it's endorphins and, you know, all of their
true.
Stuff. But it's like nobody really feels like laughing. So somebody will start going, ha, ha, ho, ho, hee, hee. And then somebody else will like, ha, ha. And pretty soon we force the laughter out of our body. And you just feel better. So laughing every day.
Laughter is the best medicine. We absolutely know that. And
yeah.
thank you so much, Linda, for sharing your experience and knowledge about what truly improves our health and well-being.
You're welcome.
And I'd like to thank John and Dolly Kremers, who, besides biking all over the world, riding on cruise ships backwards on return journeys that they just came back on. When I say backwards, it was a repositioning cruise. And in addition, speaking several languages, they are the master technicians who have assisted me this evening and so many evenings in the past. And good night to all of our Southeast Alaska listeners. Please tune in on another Monday next month at 7 p.m. on K2 for another edition of Mind Over Matter. Good night.